KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Oakland in the Temescal neighborhood.
Jack London Square.
Fruitvale.
Adams Point.
Grand Lake neighborhood.
Maxwell Park.
I'm from Oakland and I live in the Laurel District.
Coming up, we'll hear how the debate over farm subsidies affects Californians' health and even access to food stamps.
80% of the funding for the Farm Bill actually goes to these nutrition assistance programs.
Then we'll get a behind-the-scenes look inside the San Francisco Marin Food Bank.
Every single day we have huge 18-wheelers deliver truckloads upon truckloads of produce.
And we'll hear from Luis Gallardo of San Francisco band Sweet Lou and the Sweet and Lows.
I need to do this for the next generation. I want to be that Richie Valens for a kid. I want to be that Carlos Santana for a kid.
That's coming up today on Cross Currents. The Farm Bill sounds like a bill that deals with farming, but it actually deals with a lot more than just farming. It can affect people's health and nutrition, and it's up for renewal and being debated in Congress right now. Here to talk to us more about what's on the table for this farm bill and how it might impact people's health in the Bay Area is KALW's health reporter Marissa Ortega Welch. Hi, Marissa.
Hi, Hannah.
So remind us what the farm bill is and what it does.
So the Farm Bill comes up for renewal about every 5 years. It is a bill that funds a whole lot of programs that have to do with agriculture, food, and nutrition. It was actually started in the 30s during the Dust Bowl and the Great Depression as a way to subsidize farmers who grew staples like corn and wheat and dairy and were losing money. But then in the 70s, it ended up expanding to include a lot more than just agricultural subsidies.
So how? What was added?
Right. So it's expanded to include a lot of things now, like funding for agricultural research, forestry, support for the U.S. to export our agriculture, things like international food aid, conservation programs. But the big thing that got added in the 70s is the nutrition assistance program. And that is, of course, what we often call food stamps. It's actually called SNAP now, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. In California, because we have to be different, we have our own name for it. It's called CalFresh, right? So whatever you call it, this is the assistance that low-income families can apply for and get from the federal government help every month to have a little bit more money to spend at the grocery store to feed their families.
Okay, all that is part of the Farm Bill. So what's up for debate this year?
Yeah, so 80% of the funding for the Farm Bill actually goes to these nutrition assistance programs. So what's up for the debate this year is those nutrition assistance programs. That's the big sticky wicket, basically. The things like ag subsidies, all the kind of other things that the Farm Bill does are mostly going to remain the same. The biggest changes are to SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, aka food stamps. So the big proposal that's on the table this year is that it's going to change the work requirements for families who receive this nutrition assistance program, for families who receive food stamps. So right now, this is how it works. If you're an able-bodied, childless adult between the ages of 18 and 49, you have to have part-time work in order to get food stamps.
Okay.
And there are some exceptions made if you have a disability or if you're pregnant or if you have kids. That's how it works right now.
Okay.
The proposed Farm Bill would change that. It would basically take out a lot of the little exceptions that allow people to not work in order to get food stamps.
Like what?
So it would say that anyone, any parent who has a kid over the age of 5 would have to work, would have to have part-time work to receive food stamps. It would also increase the age requirement to up to 59. So now anyone between the ages of 18 to 59 who is physically able to work and has kids over the age of 5 would have to have a part-time job in order to be eligible for food stamps.
Okay.
If you didn't have a part-time job, you would have to enroll in job training, workforce training program. And the proposed bill would expand funding for those type of programs. And this is all part of this larger plan by the Trump administration to strengthen work requirements for social assistance programs.
So how many people would this affect?
So the Republican staff who are working on this say that about 7 million adults across the country would be affected by these new work requirements. So here in California, about 4 million people are enrolled in the Nutrition Assistance Program, what we call here in the state CalFresh. But we can't say yet how many people in California the new work requirements would affect. You know, the details are still being worked out and the state doesn't want to estimate yet. Mm-hmm. But nationally, the Congressional Budget Office estimates that if these new workforce requirements are put into place, that about 1 million people over the next 10 years would be dropped from the food stamp program.
So it sounds like the assumption is that people are not working or not working enough or even, you know, taking advantage of this system.
Right. And a lot of Republicans right now and for a long time have wanted to make sure that if people are receiving federal assistance, that they are working for it, that there is no free lunch. But opponents point to studies that show that if people aren't working and receiving federal assistance, there's a good reason that they're not working. Either they are sick or have a disability, or they're taking care of a family member full time, or they're in school. So Democrats who oppose this new farm bill are pointing to studies that show that these workforce requirements, they both don't work and they're not needed.
So were there any other big changes that were recommended? Things that did not make it?
Yeah, so there was some talk of adding a drug testing requirement, but that did not make it on. And then the Trump administration has also been floating this idea of instead of giving out money, you know, you get a little, it looks like a debit card. It's called an EBT card for food stamps. Now, the idea of actually having stamps, little stamp, paper stamps to exchange for groceries is long, long gone. But there was an idea to just give people a box of non-perishable goods instead of this nutrition assistance money. That did not make it into the bill.
Okay, so what has the reaction been like in the Senate?
So this was first voted on by the House Agricultural Committee. They voted to advance the farm bill to the House floor. It was voted on by all Republicans and no Democrats, so the divisions are very much along party lines. Mm-hmm. And the Democrats are saying there's no way that this is going to pass with this workforce requirement. They're calling it a non-starter. Mm. Nancy Pelosi has called it a radical, harmful bill. And again, they're pointing to studies that show that these workforce requirements don't work or that they're not needed.
What else is in this farm bill proposal that might impact health?
Yeah, so there's something entirely different that has nothing to do with food stamps, which is an interesting provision to the farm bill that would change how pesticides are regulated. So right now, the EPA, when it decides whether or not to approve a pesticide for use, it has to consult with a bunch of other agencies, and it has to decide if the pesticide would impact any endangered species as part of the Endangered Species Act. So this provision added to the farm bill would no longer require that. It would say that the EPA doesn't have to consider whether pesticides would impact endangered species. And environmental groups are coming out very strongly against this. I talked to someone at the Center for Biological Diversity that said this would be the first time that an industry, the pesticide industry, was allowed to be exempt from the Endangered Species Act, and it sets a really dangerous precedent.
And who's supporting this?
The Republicans in the Farm Bill and also pesticide companies like ConAgra. And so, you know, this is really, we're talking right now about the Endangered Species Act, which of course affects animals, but environmental groups say that this sets a dangerous precedent for people's health too, because it takes away some of the legal rights of the EPA and environmental groups to sue over harmful pesticides that could affect human health as well.
So what's next? Is this farm bill likely to pass as it is now? Or like, what are the opponents doing about this?
Right. So as I said, it's only passed in committee so far, and now it goes to the House floor for a vote, and then it goes to the Senate. It's going to need 60 votes to pass, and there's only 51 Republicans, so it's going to have to reach across the aisle in order to get support. And like I said, Democrat senators are saying this workforce requirement is not going to work for them. So there's a long road ahead of it. And it's just another example this year that we're seeing of an issue being tackled as a partisan issue that in previous years has had more bipartisan support.
Okay, give us a sense of a timeline. What are we looking at?
Well, our current farm bill expires in October, so we should have a new bill by then. But if it doesn't, not to worry, Congress can extend our current farm bill. So farmers and people who receive food stamps won't be left out in the cold or hungry.
Okay. Well, thank you, Marissa.
Thank you, Hannah.
Marissa Ortega-Welch is KLW's health reporter. If you have an idea for a health store, you can reach her at health@klw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Every year, about 40 million people in the U.S. struggle to find enough to eat.
And if you go back and you look at economic data, you see that since the mid-70s, we've seen a steady march of having more people at the bottom of the income curve, fewer in the middle, and a very, very tiny number of people at the very top.
That's Paul Ash, the executive director of the San Francisco Food Bank.
And that's what's fueling more people needing food assistance every month. They can't earn enough money to feed themselves through the part-time jobs or the low-paying full-time jobs that they have. And it's increasing. It's not stopping. That trend marches on.
The San Francisco and Marin Food Bank serve 225,000 people a year. Today, we're going inside the main distribution center in Potrero Hill to see what happens behind the scenes in order to get food to the people who need it most.
My name is Paul Ash. I'm the executive director of the San Francisco Food Bank. We're here today in the distribution center, where we receive truckloads, many truckloads every day, of fresh fruits and vegetables, canned products, dry products like rice and beans. They come into our warehouse and they're stored, sorted, in the case of fresh produce, quickly turned around and distributed out to people in our community who don't have enough to eat.
Right now, we're making our way toward the warehouse floor, and this is where all of our food comes in. My name is Blaine Johnson, and I'm the Media Relations Manager for the San Francisco and Marin Food Banks. So it's fresh fruits and vegetables, it's really healthy food.
The fresh produce mostly comes here from California, from Southern California in the wintertime, Northern California in the summertime. We'll go to Washington and Idaho for things like potatoes and onions, even into Northern Mexico in the wintertime so that we can have fresh produce year-round for our clients.
We have forklifts buzzing all around. It's very busy here in the morning. This is when we receive, you know, dozens of truckloads of fresh produce. So you'll see the employees moving those around on forklifts and putting them into orders that are going to go out to our food pantries this morning.
Hi, my name is Lloyd Jones. How you doing? Yeah, I'm what you call an order builder. What we do is we start from potatoes and yams and from on the pallet, and we build them up to make them look like this every morning.
They're just stacks all the way up to the ceiling, and we've got bulk rice, we've got other staples like oats. And what's going to happen is our volunteers come in every day. We can have as many as hundreds of volunteers a day, and they will repackage those totes of rice and oats into family-size one-pound portions. So we're going to move from the warehouse floor to our volunteer repack room. And in that room, we have a volunteer shift. I think it's kids today and maybe some adults. And what they're doing is repacking these bulk quantities of food into one-pound family-sized portions.
So, well, we're like sorting kiwis for people who don't have food so like they can survive. And we're doing it because we want to help people. My name is Stanley Chan.
John Mellon.
And his name is Ethan Tran.
Kids as young as 4 can actually come in and volunteer here. And it's a great way for children to sort of get back to their communities, get connected with people who might have a little bit less than they do, and quite frankly, have some fun. You know, you can hear them laughing and playing, and it's usually a pretty fun morning.
And our teacher wants us to help people that don't have any food. So it's good to help people.
With people that don't have much food.
Because some people aren't as fortunate as us, so it's kind of like a responsibility to help other people.
The people who enjoy bringing their families here to volunteer the most are our most significant donors. And I think they're worried that their children aren't seeing the reality of life in the United States. And so this is a good starting conversation, a good place to start a conversation.
So right now, they are wrapping orders on the warehouse floor. So they're preparing this to go out to a food pantry. So you've got carrots on the bottom row and then a whole bunch of beans on the top, which is a great source of protein.
Well, the food will go out from here, all to low-income individuals and families. Some will go out through schools. We distribute food in churches, which generally are kind of catchments for neighborhoods where anybody can come and register and get food assistance. And then we also distribute food in closed communities, so in Tenderloin hotels, seniors' residences. So those are places where only the residents can come and get food. It's a big operation, so it takes a lot of money to run it. But it's the individual that really keep this place moving.
That piece was produced by Rebecca Burungi. To find out how you can get involved with food banks in your area, go to our website, kalw.org, click on Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. When Luis Gallardo isn't working with San Francisco teenagers as a school counselor, he's the lead singer and guitarist of the soul band Sweet Lou and the Sweetenlows. The band recently released their debut EP called From Scratch. In this edition of Bay Area Beats, Lou shares why he hopes his music can help inspire the next generation of Latino musicians.
My name is Lou Gallardo. I play guitar and sing in Sweet Lou and the Sweetenlows. Somebody told me you're gonna leave me. You're gonna find somebody new. I didn't know I could sing for the longest time. My freshman year of high school, I got made fun of for attempting to sing, and I banished it to the back of my mind. And I work with kids. I work at a middle school after school program. And it's something I tell my students all the time. I tell them, if you find that one thing, you are so lucky. Because some people go their whole lives and they never find that thing. Or they think that they found it and then they let it go. And they think the rest of their lives, what if? Go and find yourself a man who can love you in a way that I can. And I said, hey, darling. Music was always playing in the house. There's always Motown playing in the house. There's always soul music playing in the house. Rock and roll. A lot of Neil Young. A lot of Hendrix. A lot of Otis Redding. Santana was really big in the house. And I think to see someone who was from my culture do it, because for me growing up, all we had was Richie Valens, Selena, Santana, and a few people here and there. I started playing guitar just because my dad played guitar. And there's just always a guitar in the house. And then I started picking up the guitar when I was around 12. And it just clicked. And I couldn't stop doing it. I remember you would get in trouble for grades. And I would just be sequestered to my room. And I would just, that's all I would do. Is just play guitar and attempt to write songs. I think when any kid expresses that they want to go in the arts, whether it be acting, a painter, sculptor, a songwriter, a screenwriter, a filmmaker, I think it's just this immense fear that comes over like parents. And it's not like fear that they won't succeed. It's just fear of the struggle that they're going to have. Ruin my voice with cigarettes. Going for no set on me. I dropped out from college, and that's when I told my mom, and I was like, I'm leaving. I'm gonna go play in a reggae band in Santa Cruz. It's gonna be great. We're gonna record. And my mom was like very upset. She's like, you're so smart, and like you're wasting your intelligence. And I was like, no, I need to go live life. That's what I need to go do right now. I need to go live life. And I've talked to her now, and she was very angry at first, but now she's couldn't be prouder. Performances is for the audience, 100%. I finally figured out that recording is, it's church, it's meditation. I used to be really afraid of it, of recording, and then I finished and I was like, no, this is just a beautiful thing. I know that you wish that I was a little more dependable. For me, when I felt like, oh my God, we did it, I was layering harmonies, and I was just in the booth by myself, and I just straight up started bawling, because I was just like, all of this work, all of these like experiences being like compiled into this, even if it goes nowhere, even if no one listens to it, even if no one likes it, we have something, and even if no one else sees it, I see it. I think something that's really important right now is for there to be all kinds of representation within like people of color, with musicians, especially like Latinos. There's so many of us here, and there's so many stories to be like heard and perspectives to be heard. I need to do this for the next generation too, even if I don't get anywhere, even if I'm just like teaching a kid guitar at the school that I work at, who's Latino. I think that's huge. I think it's a link. It truly, really, truly creates a link. I want to be that Richie Valens for a kid. I want to be that Carlos Santana for a kid. Even if I don't hit that level of like insane good that they were, but like if I could be that for one kid, that'd be incredible. And that would be better than winning a Grammy. That would be better than getting signed by a label. If I found a kid years from now who hit it big, who came to me and was like, I listened to your EP, I listened to your album, and I didn't know that we could do that as a people, that would be incredible.
Oh,
was Luis Gallardo of the band Sweet Lou and the Sweet and Lows. The band's debut EP called From Scratch is available. This edition of Bay Area Beats was produced by Audio Academy fellow Bo Walsh. And that's our show. Today's Cross Currents team includes Marissa Ortega-Welch, Lisa Morehouse, Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Christine Nguyen, Truk Nguyen, Lilia Vega, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are Jackie Sajiko, Gabe Graben, and James Rowlands. The line producer is Liza Veal. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by Scott Padden. He's been making music in San Francisco since 2011, and he's playing at the Octopus Literary Salon tomorrow night. The show starts at 7 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
You sped off in the evening, headed east on that 80 highway. Took me by surprise when he looked me in the eyes yesterday. But I was looking for a reason to let you slip back out of state. You were 2 miles from Omaha by the time that it crossed my brain. Three cigarettes from town.